Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Rotten Tomatoes is Wrong. My name is Mark Ellis, or you may know me this time of year as the plus one to Miss Jacqueline Coley, not only the co-host here today, but also she's in the midst of award season. She's hobnobbing. You invited me to an event. I could have been your plus one. You were at the London.
I was
which
at
is
the
right
London.
Down the street from the Comedy Store.
This has been a thing. If Sunset Tower, the London, are the two locations that are closest to the Comedy Store.
Where I'm usually known to be found.
He's there on occasion.
I haunt it.
And so whenever I know I'm doing an event around the time that he would be on stage, which for folks that don't know is usually around or around the time you'd be near there, 8 to 10 is my like sweet spot.
You know
as long
me
as
too
I'm
well.
Being there, I can find him. But he wasn't. He was having better fun with a four-legged friend.
With Molly the Wonder Dog. And, I guess somebody who is a very special guest today who has had some fun with four-legged and two-legged creatures, according to the Jurassic World franchise, would be Daniela Pineda, who is also the star of the new movie Plane with Gerard Butler. Number one new movie at the box office the weekend it came out, and it's fresh on the tomato meter. Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm pleased.
I will say this. Also, we got a shout out by your co-star, Mr. Gerard Butler. I think he's a man that really loves every movie of his that comes out fresh because he was literally like, you have no idea how happy this makes me.
Yeah. Yeah. It exceeded. I mean, we knew it just exceeded everybody's expectations. And then after I finally got to see it, I was like, fuck yeah.
This is a really good. It's a really good action movie from what. Yeah.
It's legit. It's totally legit. It's I also really like the review that obviously I love the Rotten Tomatoes review firstly, but Washington Post said it's cinematic junk food but tastes so good. Mm. And I was like, thank you for acknowledging for it for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, we all are going to be suckers and eventually want McDonald's fries. Like you smell it and that's what I imagine is going to be. And I apologize to you. I haven't seen Plane as of this recording.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I was going to go see it. I had stuff come up.
But he's going to see it.
I'm going to see it. We were talking about Olympus Has Fallen on this show a few weeks ago.
For Plane. So we've already commemorated this movie in our small way.
Yeah, I was watching TV. I was watching football or something, and I saw Daniela in an ad for Plane, and I was like, oh, she's in Plane. Oh, we should talk now. And now we're here, and I said, Daniela, what movie do you want to talk about? Do you want to defend that the tomato meter got wrong? It's kind of the name of the show. Mm-hmm. And you picked The Cell.
Yeah.
From the year 2000, starring Jennifer Lopez, Vince Vaughn, directed by Tarsem Singh. 45% rotten on the tomato meter. The audience score rebounds a little bit, 57%. And one of the reasons we're talking about it is because Ms. Pineda is a big fan, I think.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Jennifer Lopez is in Shotgun Wedding with Josh Duhamel, and that drops on Amazon. I think it's out now. So as of this recording, it is out now. Let's get to you first. You pick The Cell. You're like, this is the movie I want to talk about and defend. So I'm guessing if I ask you, is Rotten Tomatoes wrong about The Cell?
I do think Rotten Tomatoes might be wrong. I mean, obviously the audience will speak for themselves. But I feel like sometimes we forget at the time which something came out, it was really innovative.
Mm.
I don't think you should compare it to what's out now. You have to think of 2000. And for me, going to theaters being, what was I think it was eighth grade, ninth grade.
Y2K.
Oh, hell yeah. I remember that. I was ready for the world to shut down. But going to the theaters and seeing, first of all, this checked a lot of boxes for me. It was a lead Latina who happened to be really, really hot. We're like, yeah. And then she, you know, and then it's horror, which is my favorite genre, and thriller, and sci-fi.
And procedural.
And procedural. Yeah. So what are you talking about? Yeah, 47? That's wrong.
Okay. So, Jack, would you agree that the tomato meter got it wrong here? Again, we're 45% of the tomato meter, 57% audience score. Where do you land?
I think the audience score is a little bit more correct. I would definitely say that I could get this one to fresh, which is surprising to me when I went to rewatch it that I was automatically putting it at fresh because, as you know, I have my Constantine litmus test. And I love Constantine. I really do. And I think that score is criminal. But I would put this up where I would put where I think Constantine should be, right? Yeah. I would put that up there. And I'm like, I always said Constantine is a great, like, you know, I think Plane is what, 71, like 68, somewhere in there.
Currently
like
74%.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like kind of that sort of idea of like, this is not perfect, but for what it gives really good. And so I definitely say Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
Okay. First of all, if there's a member of the Fresh Ketchup crew that's like, listen to every show, can you compile a list? Has Jacqueline referenced Constantine more than I've referenced Van Halen? I want to see who is leading that race.
Definitely beat you over that. Because it is still the movie. Everyone has that one movie that you kind of, I'm not going to have them do to me what they did to you on 13 Hours. I am self-reflecting.
13 Hours, an all-time great film.
All-time great film, but I have to like, that's the way it is now. It's like, for me here now, it's like, if we're going to have a movie around that like edge, basically I'm like, is it better or worse than Constantine?
But that's why it's exciting to do this podcast, because occasionally we do feel like, not necessarily influence policy, but people hear the show and they say, right, maybe I'll revisit this. Sister Act 2 was like 17% when we talked about it. Yeah. It's gone up.
Yeah.
Constantine,
I'm shocked it was
gone
that low.
Yeah.
Right?
That was a big deal.
It's a great movie. Yeah.
I think it's up to his 30s now, which is amazing. And I do think that is the podcast effect.
Quick question. Another movie that comes to mind, which for me is sort of in a similar category to The Cell, that I don't think it was necessarily well received, was Prometheus. I loved Prometheus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that is another one.
But I
that
didn't
one
like Guy Ritchie being painted as an old person, just cast an old person, but that's neither here nor there.
That one had fresh reviews, though. Prometheus was the opposite. Audiences hate it, but critics liked it for the most part.
Yeah, I don't like, Prometheus looked beautiful. I don't like when astronauts have sex in space. Keep it in your pants until you get back on Earth. You don't know what's out there. You don't know what's going from one body to the other one.
Well, Tom Cruise is going to test that in the next couple years.
Yeah.
Give me that Mission Impossible movie. Yeah. So we're here to talk about The Cell. We also want to give a shout out to some of our editorials that are on RottenTomatoes.com right now, including all the Jennifer Lopez movies ranked. Is Selena number one? If not, it should be. We'll probably talk about our favorite J-Lo movie by the end of this. The 14 Rotten Horror Movies We Love is one of the editorial movies, and I believe The Cell is amongst those. But like we said, it's horror-ish, but there's also a lot of other genres. This movie covers most of the bases at Blockbuster Video, and The Cell is featured in the book Rotten Tomatoes, Rotten Movies We Love by Rotten Tomatoes. So, Jacqueline, I now turn it over to you. You have the treat of giving us the synopsis of what exactly The Cell is about.
So, The Cell stars Jennifer Lopez and Vincent D'Onofrio. She plays a criminologist and psychiatrist.
And Vince Vaughn.
And Vince Vaughn, sorry, as well. And also Vince Vaughn. That is the other thing about this movie, is the dueling Vinces and Vince Vaughn. And she is basically enlisted by the Federal Bureau of Investigation because Vincent D'Onofrio's character is in a coma and they do not know where his last victim is. He puts all of his victims in these elaborate cases, which basically slowly drown them over time. And they're in a race against the clock to find out where his last victim is before he either dies or they're really trying to figure this out. And they're using a new technology which allows Catherine, the criminal psychologist, to go inside of his consciousness, to delve into the deep recesses of his mind, to hopefully find clues as to where this girl could be hidden while he's existing in the coma. The interesting part is while you're living in this thriller cop genre, the minute you step inside the serial killer's head, you are transported into what could basically be described as Guillermo del Toro's best fantasy.
Yeah, yes.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is how you get locked into The Cell.
Yeah, it gets a little wacky. It did make me wonder what if y'all went inside my brain, what it would look like. It would probably just be that green chair I have that doesn't go with anything else in my house.
Yeah. And football.
Some snacks, some football, a dog. That's really all. But you go inside the mind of a serial killer, gets a little loony.
Yeah,
is all we're gonna say. So we think, we all think Rotten Tomatoes got this one a little wrong. I can get it to Fresh as well. Yeah. I also think that Rotten Tomatoes is wrong. I think that this deserves to be a Fresh movie, but that's what we think. We're gonna get into movie talk in just a little bit, but first, our good buddy Tim Ryan, the expert review curation manager here at Rotten Tomatoes, is gonna tell us what critics were saying at the time about The Cell. 2 minutes
with Tim. Tarsem Singh cut his teeth on music videos, directing striking clips for En Vogue, Suzanne Vega, and most notably, R.E.M. In a 2016 interview with Rolling Stone about the making of the video for Losing My Religion, Tarsem said he was inspired by Bollywood, the paintings of Caravaggio, and a short story by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. It was a heady mix which cleaned up at the 1991 MTV Video Music Awards, beating out clips from such heady hitters as Herb Ritts, Julian Temple, Michael Bay, and David Fincher. So no one could deny that Tarsem Singh had a unique artistic sensibility. But when it came to his first feature, The Cell, critics felt the visuals were undeniably dazzling and haunting, but were in the service of a slim plot and thinly sketched characters. The Cell is rotten at 45% on the tomato meter with 164 reviews, and it has a 57% audience score. So what did the critics have to say? In a rotten review, Lou Luminick of the New York Post wrote, "If looks could kill, this would be the best movie of the summer. But beneath the considerable eye candy, The Cell is an awfully generic variation on the overworked serial killer genre." However, in a fresh review, Peter Travers of Rolling Stone wrote, "Tarsem uses the dramatically shallow plot to create a dream world densely packed with images of beauty and terror that cling to the memory, even if you don't want them to." The Rotten Tomatoes critics' consensus reads, "The Cell offers disturbing, stunning eye candy, but its visual pleasures are no match for a confused storyline that undermines the movie's inventive aesthetic." So that's The Cell. And I know I only mentioned this earlier, but Tarsem's video for Hold On by En Vogue is hypnotic. You should check it out if you haven't seen it. Back to you, folks.
Thank you, Tim, for letting us know what was going on in the year 2000.
It was.
Remember that Conan bit?
It was.
Andy Richter with a flashlight. So we're going to get into movie talk about The Cell, a movie that reminds a lot of people Silence of the Lambs. And also, I'm going to put Nightmare on Elm Street in there. Cue movie talk. Before we get into the comparisons with is this as good as Silence of the Lambs or where does this fit in Freddy Krueger's world, let's just talk about Jennifer Lopez, the light, the luminous being known as Jennifer Lopez, who has blessed us here on Earth with her presence. Why do we love J-Lo so much? What is her best movie? Is it Shotgun Wedding?
I think J-Lo has an every woman appeal when she wants to, but it is like an every woman that you know is not every woman.
It's very hard to be that every woman.
You know what I mean? Like, she is the type of every woman that a lot of women would aspire to be, but can't achieve in the best way possible. Yeah. Whereas in Reese Witherspoon is the opposite. She's an every woman who is exactly who these women are. And so they identify with her in a completely different way.
Yeah. And I'll piggyback off what you're saying. She's the Tom Brady of Latinas.
Yeah.
She just keeps going the extra mile. Her numbers don't decrease. They only increase. She's like an automaton. I don't know how she does it, but also I think challenges the notion that, like, you know, after 35, ladies are disposable, and she's like, yeah, I'm going to turn that on its head. That's stupid. Yeah.
I do appreciate she's a woman that knows her brand, and her brand is bigger than anybody ever wanted it to be.
I do think this movie is her most off-brand film, but I do think it's her coolest movie.
That might be why it's got such a cool kick to it, because it's Jennifer Lopez doing this. Like, I first came across J-Lo when the smash hit Anaconda hit theaters, and I love me a good snake movie. I'm terrified of snakes. I'm like Indiana Jones. I am terrified of snakes in real life. I love them to death. I'm fascinated, horrified by them. And the cool thing about Anaconda, I was doing some research on this, Jennifer Lopez was one of the first to say, no, I deserve equal pay. You're going to pay Ice Cube or whoever else this.
Yep. Oh,
and
yeah.
I think she made the point, like, to her agent and to the execs, like, hey, who do you think is bringing in all of these females to come see this movie?
Yeah.
Do you think it's Ice Cube? Do you think it's a giant snake?
Nope.
Do you think it's John Voight doing a crazy accent?
Yeah.
It's me.
You know what movie it was that she made that happen onto? It was The Wedding Planner with Matthew McConaughey.
Good for her.
Because he was a bankable leading man.
Sure.
And the other kicker with that one is the same weekend she was number one at the box office, she also had the number one single.
I remember that.
That was like one of the first times an artist had the number one movie at the box office and the number one single on the radio.
You better pay her, if not more.
If not more, yeah.
Yeah, I also declare the same thing. Like, I want equal pay.
Exactly. I just don't get it. Like, again, you're all showing up for the same horrible conditions. But this is the thing. It still doesn't exist because look what happened to Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams. The same days.
Oh, yeah.
On a reshoot to save the film from Kevin Spacey, he got paid. She didn't.
It mostly happens like that.
Yeah, that Ridley Scott movie.
And this is the kicker about that whole thing. She had the same agents.
Agents. Not all of them are good. Some of them are snakes. Just
mine
like
are
the
great.
Ones
I love
you'll
mine.
See.
I love you all.
Daniels are amazing.
Yeah.
They're here That's in the room. Hi, agents.
That's right.
If we look at Jennifer Lopez in the context of The Cell, and so like she was just starting to get hot. Like Selena had come out and Selena was a revelation. If Selena came out today, that's an Oscar nomination for sure. That movie comes out, Anaconda's a big hit.
Yeah.
So she started to get some steam in terms of being a film-going presence, an A-list actress. When The Cell comes out, I remember seeing ads for it and knowing who Vince Vaughn was and knowing who Jennifer Lopez was and kind of getting into these trippy things. I don't think I ever saw this in a theater. Did you see it in the theater? Were you like, oh, I need to see this opening weekend?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I remember theater was packed and I remember where I was sitting. I remember it pretty vividly. Yeah.
Also, you're from Northern California?
Yeah, I'm from Oakland.
Yeah.
And I also remember that I was in love with Vince Vaughn because I had also seen Swingers and I thought Swingers was the coolest movie ever.
Yeah.
So for me, it had my crush and it had like my little hero. So for me, it was a big deal.
How about Jacqueline Coley in Austin?
I remember that Vincent D'Onofrio was creepy from Full Metal Jacket. And I did not think that that was going to change with this film. I was right. I think this was an HBO watch first for me. Because I do very remember The Cell. Like the, you know, HBO used to have the like images come down and then it would like show Jennifer Lopez in that moment. So I think this was a HBO movie for me.
I think this was a Netflix sending me the DVD and popping it in and then popping it back in the mail. But I rewatched it again and I thought I was going to blow y'all's minds with how smart I am, with what an amazing film watcher I've become. Because as soon as this movie came on, I remembered very little about it. So I put this on a couple nights ago. Me and Molly the Wonder Dog were sitting there, we're watching The Cell. And within 2 seconds, I'm thinking, this feels like a movie that I loved that I think came out in 2008 called The Fall, directed by Tarsem Singh. And I'm like, I'm going to impress them with my knowledge. Because directed by Tarsem Singh. And I'm like, God damn it. This guy's, they're going to know. So, but it did feel like The Fall before The Fall, just visually.
Yeah.
And it's like, that guy has such a signature style.
Yeah.
He sort of got like I think, corporatized by the producers with The Immortals.
I was going to say, he did The Immortals, which unfortunately, the worst part about that was, is everyone called him a Zack Snyder ripoff.
Yeah. That's
and that was the biggest disservice to him because honestly, I think it was partly Zack Snyder didn't like that. And that was also what was like, this is the thing that happens sometimes when people get labeled the ripoff of somebody else.
Yeah.
If that person doesn't like that, they maybe make that comparison in not the best ways.
Right. I'll gladly, though, be the best J-Lo ripoff. I'll take that.
I want that for you.
Oh,
I really do. And I see
that
for you.
I want to be the Kirkland J-Lo.
I mean,
that's the dream.
Do you know how many guys at the gym want to be knockoff Gerard Butler? They want to be the Dr. Perky to his Dr. Pepper.
I mean, I don't want to say which guys.
You're probably looking at one of them.
I was just going to say, I'm like, is this not one of them?
Yeah.
But you're doing so well being the knockoff Topher Grace.
Well, the thing about Vince Vaughn, too, I'm definitely second rate. If you go to the Topher Grace store and you can't afford Topher Grace, if M&M's a little
so
too
bad.
Hardcore
I feel
for
bad.
You, if you want suburban M&M, you come to Rotten Tomatoes is wrong.
I feel really bad about saying that. I only say it because he normally makes that self-deprecating joke, but I would never want to bully you that way. You're much better than a discount Topher
Grace. I can't remember if I did it on the special I just taped. I think I mentioned Topher so I can bear that now. So now
I've worked with Topher. It's a different vibe.
It is a different vibe.
It's a different vibe.
Anyway, I feel bad for that. You're not the discount anyone. You are the first rate Mark Ellis.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, back to this movie that we all agree should be fresh. I wonder why is the movie rotten? I don't know what critics were thinking at the time, but when you saw it and when you see it now, when you rewatch it, what is it about this movie that leaps out to you and is like, no, this is a cool, fresh movie?
Yeah, well, at the time, it felt really fresh because, I love horror. And I love when it feels like this is a movie that the director...
Tarsem Singh.
Tarsem Singh, that he wouldn't make. And I love when people who probably would have nothing to do with the genre do their take on a genre. And this was so many layers. It was like sci-fi and it was beautiful and it was scary. There was also humor in it. It weaved together a lot of different things that felt very new to me and very grand. And even though it was like in someone's brain, it always felt like a wide shot and it always felt big.
Yeah.
And it to me, the technology was really exciting. Yeah. Because I think when we're kids, we're always like, hey, we're friends. What if we could have like the same dream and like kind of like hang out in that world? Mm-hmm. And now you kind of get to do that. You get to crawl into somebody else's head, which is why I referenced Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yes.
But I guess the criticism I would lob at this movie is that I felt like we sort of took a biopsy of what it's like to be in somebody's head. And we didn't really get the full spectrum of it. We just got a little sliver. And I wanted more because there's all this like just amazing visual artistic vision that you see when you get inside a serial killer's head, when you get inside Jennifer Lopez's head. Doesn't matter. But I wanted more.
It could have been
that.
More disturbing and less beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of beauty and it could have been a little more rotten. I mean, it is there. I think we're jaded by that. But like there's so many images in that that are literally like genuinely, I think, like jaw-droppingly disturbing. Everything from like hanging his skin.
Oh, yeah.
That like I literally when I was watching this, I forgot how much of that like 2000s R-rated horror that we were allowed to receive at that time, mm-hmm. we are not allowed to receive now. That is, yeah missing.
You could argue that the real world is scarier than the sort of dream inside your own head world that you get in this movie. Because there's two sort of landscapes you get. You get what's happening with looking for this crime where this guy, played by, Vincent D'Onofrio, who is even more weirder than he was in, like, as the extraterrestrial in Men in Black or as Kingpin.
Oh, yeah.
He's like hanging himself by his back. Ah, that looked painful.
Yeah.
When he puts these hooks into his back and into his calves, and then he just suspends himself, and it just looked like, man.
Looked like a Nine Inch Nails music video.
Yeah.
It was like kind of like a little metal.
Yeah, don't you just want to do a puzzle?
No.
Like, isn't there
I would want to do
more
puzzle
congenial
over that,
hobby that you could pick, but it's the battle of the serial killers because Vince Vaughn was a pretty good weirdo in Psycho a couple years before the remake.
I was going to say, this is after
the hottest serial killer.
He was a pretty hot serial
at the time.
You're checking into that Bates
Motel. Yeah, I would have been a victim.
What's interesting with this one.
I'm showering. I don't know if anybody's.
Oh, no.
Mrs. Woo! Bates, tell your son. I just started the water.
Oh, God. Honestly, I dig that, though. The reverse Psycho where she's actually waiting for it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm in here.
And then I trap him.
Yeah.
The other thing that I will say is one of my favorite genres of like psychological horror is something that is somewhat metaphysical or kind of straddling dimensions or, you know, we're kind of weaving in reality. And this movie really did that for me. I really loved that. And it's not easy to pull off.
No, especially when it's a race against time, which is what we have to find this new victim that Carl, the serial killer, has encased in glass and is about to drown. And so that's where this movie really ramped up for me. Like, I was intrigued by the technology of it. I like the stars, and so automatically I'm in. Mm. It's a cool landscape. But then the fact that it feels almost like an episode of 24, where it's like, we got to get to the end of this, and there's like a finite amount of time. Once the water starts, I mean, it sort of felt like a precursor to Saw in a way.
Oh, I was just, you took the words out of my
mouth. Yes. And I mentioned that Tarsem Singh directed it, Jacqueline.
Tarsem Singh. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about what you were saying, though, as you were saying it, and I was like, I really do wonder, though, how much of this was J-Lo backlash. Because
that's a very interesting point.
Like, I was, as you were saying that, I'm listening to you, and like we're all thinking about like why with all these movies. Sometimes there's always something that's there that we can't really hear, like a like scoring underneath it. And I do think that it needs to be appreciated with especially women of color, but especially J-Lo and how she went about it. This is not too long after the Cameron Diaz quotes and such. There was a bit of a J-Lo backlash because she became such of a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And I think this was the beginning of that. This was the beginning of people being like, she thinks very highly of herself. You know what I mean? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
right around that time.
And she's touched on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's brought that up. That is a possibility. Yeah, she just, that's why I went to the theater, because she already popped off at this point.
Yeah, I should be very clear. This was, Jennifer Lopez had a very, you know, I would say, tell-all interview where she was pretty candid with the journalist, where she talked about basically who she thought had talent in Hollywood and who didn't. And then there was a famous quote that said Cameron Diaz was a lucky model.
Yeah. I gotta tell you, at least I'm really thankful that no one put a mic in my face, my second, third year in this business.
Fair.
Being a public person is a learning experience, and she has far more experience in that than I do. And you, you're young and you're cocky and you're full of energy and you're just calling it like you see it. And then you get older and you're like,
people often regret it.
I've been guilty of it. Yeah.
I'm glad we have editors for this show.
I mean, yeah, every day. Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you for making me not near as dumb as I am.
At least once a month I have to call Brian. I'm like, hey. That one thing, yeah.
The thing that wakes you up at night, you're like,
I don't know if I should say that. Actually, one of the people I actually like, and I am okay with standing in publicly, is Bill Hader, because one of my favorite quotes of his is like, yeah.
Oh, you're a Bill Hader fan. I had no idea. Yeah.
Hey, listen, this is why him. Though. He says, the reason why I'm not on the internet is because I am often wrong. And
hilarious.
I do not need a place that can get from my wrong thoughts to public. And what I would just say about Jennifer Lopez is, unfortunately, with very famous people, that is not the case. But even more importantly, I think with her, I'm sure she definitely obviously regrets like her honesty and everything at that time. Mm. But in a lot of ways, look at how ambitious she was. Mm-hmm. And then maybe looking at a lot of people who maybe received her same level without any level of ambition. Like, this is literally a girl from the Bronx that was
and you're a woman of color.
And I think a lot of people, Meghan Markle is a clear example of this. There is an idea of once you ascend to a certain level, it puts people out of joint just by you existing at that certain level.
And yes. People also want to keep you in the box that they discovered you in. And for her, I think that you can, I'm watching this movie, right? And I see it's 45% of the tomato meter. So I'm just trying to equate like this movie. How does it get that score? And I think one of the through lines is people saw J-Lo as a music artist first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And it's you can look at this movie and look at the visuals that Tarsem Singh puts in and you say, oh, this is just a glorified music video, which it's not. But on the surface, you can see like these elaborate costumes and these crazy set designs and like what the hell is going on. It does feel like it would have been a really cool music video, but there's so much more substance to that.
Yes.
And that's what I think maybe folks missed at the time in 2000 when this came out.
Yeah.
And also, mind you, I'm a big fan and I know them, the Everything Everywhere All at Once. Those were a sequence of music video ideas that then got woven into something. So sometimes music video vignette, it hits.
Watch a movie without music.
Yeah.
And let me know how it goes.
Yeah.
Also, this too, this is also a perfect example of how cyclical critical reception is and how critical reception is never about innovation. It is always about expectation. Mm-hmm. Critics are happy when you give them what they expect and you do it well. They are not often happy when you do something unexpected that they didn't enjoy, even if you do it well. And this is an example of that. They were expecting, because this is the other thing about The Cell. When you go into the movie, you kind of expect it to be one way and it sort of divides the two. And so it looks more like this very high art fantasy film. And when you start it, you're in the middle of basically a Law and Order episode.
Yeah.
That expectation is a bit of, I would say, a disconnect. And I think for this one in particular, that disconnect was probably what got critics a bit out of joint. And there was a backlash to stylized cinema. Because at that time, people like Roger Ebert and a lot of these really established film critics did not think that anybody from that genre was going to be able to make it as a film director. This is before Fincher did his thing. This is back when like Hype Williams and folks like that would do one movie and then it would fail.
I think Ebert was the outlier for liking this.
Yes. Oh, he did like this one.
I think Ebert actually
did like
this.
Okay, sorry.
But I mean, a lot of other critics,
but established critics
were saying thumbs down.
They were like, this is a music video. And back at that time, that was enough for people to hate it.
That's so silly.
It's ridiculous.
I guess it was what it was.
When you look at, especially again, when you have like the fact that there are boots on the ground, we got to save this girl in time.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Favorite scenes in this movie? Where do we go? Do you go maybe towards the, like, inside the mind, or do you go, like, pursuing the evil? I'll tell you what I love in this movie is, first of all, the technological aspect, like I said, is fascinating. Mm-hmm. I love just the look of the design of the suits, and it's very evident in a cool way that Tarsem Singh saw Bram Stoker's Dracula, and the designer for that is Eiko Ishioka, and he's like, I want that person to do this. Mm. And you can kind of see a lot of similarities from Bram Stoker's Dracula. The suit that Gary Oldman wears at the beginning, that is all like burgundy with like the muscle kind of knight thing. Yeah. That's what they're wearing to like get into this. Yeah. And then once you get in there, you see a lot of like the costumes and similarities. I love when Vince Vaughn's character, Peter, is like, plug me in. I'm going in. You got a third bay. I'm going in. Part of my brain likes it because I like being the hero. Like, just put me in there. Let's go save this. Yeah. But the other part of me loves that he gets his comeuppance immediately as he gets in there and he starts getting his intestines ripped out. Yes. He's like, what the hell is happening here?
I think as soon as he's in there, correct me if I'm wrong, as soon as he's in there, it's the three people who are like,
It's
and he's like, oh, what the fuck? I'm out of my depth. Why did I do this?
Do you have a favorite moment from it?
Funny enough, there's so many good moments, like the horse being sort of extended out and cut with glass, and you can kind of see it pulsing.
Oh,
like,
that poor equine.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty metal. But, you know, actually, the thing that I always remember as a kid was when she's kind of walking and looking around, and there's like a bodybuilder woman that's like walking toward her. Like, I was like, make that horror movie.
Yeah. I love the picture of the horse. There's so many moments in this movie.
You guys love turning this poor horse into glue.
It was cool. It's just a very stylized and cool shot. And the thing I love about this movie, in the sense of like, no horses were harmed, right?
That's true.
It's a digital shot.
All right. Sure. It looked real to me.
That's the point. That means they did a good job, Mark. Yeah. It's this thing called the movies.
I'm having nightmares.
But the thing I will say about it is I think this is a love letter to style over substance in the best way possible. And the reason why people didn't dig it is because of its female protagonist. Because 300 is all style, no substance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's so many male-generated movies that are all style, no substance, all action, no, you know, meat to it.
Yeah.
This one actually had both.
Yeah.
And still the style was just so arresting. And I feel like, again, it was a backlash of that. But this film walked so that the throne room scene in Black Panther could run. So that Sam Raimi's Doctor Strange can have its moment. Like all of these very stylized action movies that we've seen in later years. Mm-hmm. This is sort of, I think, the bedrock movie to really show, again, like you can go there.
It's a bit of a Rothko, right? Yeah. It's a bit of laying the foundations and pretty ahead of its time. And people looked at it and they were like, what is that?
Yeah.
And now it's like, no, in order to have this, you had to have that.
Absolutely.
Apparently a lot of the reason why this movie got the green light in the first place was because of 90s horror films. Mm. Where you had Silence of the Lambs, which feels similar, but then you also had The Sixth Sense, which came out the year before, which is just a monster hit. You also had The Matrix. And The Matrix was very stylized, and you had the bullet time, and you had the elaborate costuming,
but
and
it
was sort of leading towards this.
It was leading towards this, but it was still in the real world. Yeah. It was still real bullets, and granted, it was like, what is it? Stylized, added to the soup blend. It was a flavor that you added to it. Yeah, you get the cool this, that, and the other, but it's still guys dodging bullets. This was literally like, you couldn't tell these were characters. This literally...
But technically, Matrix wasn't the real world.
Fair. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Real world.
I think y'all took different pills.
Yeah, exactly.
I took the green one.
Exactly. Real world elements in the sense that like they're trying to exist within the framework or whatever. The other thing with the cell is you're trapped in imagination. That is literally what you're trapped in. You're trapped in imagination, which is limitless.
Yeah.
Which that's what makes it more scary. But that's also what makes it, I think, harder for audiences to sort of like latch into it.
Yeah.
If you are Jennifer Lopez, and you know, we do spoilers on this show. So if you are like luring a serial killer into your brain, as she does towards the end of this movie, she gives herself like a cool crossbow, but that's like what you're relying on is your weapon of choice. Mm. Seems a little risky to me.
I think that again is another example of the style, because what you realize is she didn't need the crossbow.
Right.
Because once he was in her mind, she was in control.
She still, the crossbow still came in handy.
The crossbow still came in handy, obviously. But I guess that's my whole point is like the scariest moment in that moment. And I think what my favorite moment in the movie is in the end where she was just like, oh, no, sweetie. I'm not trapped in here with you. You're trapped in here with me.
Yep.
Like that. I think that was the line from the trailer,
yeah.
In fact.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good line.
Yeah. That was the one that was, you know, that's the queen takes the rook. That is like, we are really living in our power in this. And that's obviously the best outfit she's in the entire thing. It's like everything sort of hits with that. And that to me, yeah, I think that's what separates it from it is the simplicity of the idea that like she takes control. She didn't need anybody to save her. And because it is within her mind, she can be a limitless savior, not a limitless villain.
Yeah, she was the hero. Vince Vaughn was just kind of there.
Yeah, he needed rescuing.
Yeah, that's why I love that scene that I mentioned, because he thought he was going to be the hero.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, plug me in. I'll get this thing done in 15 minutes. I got a gun. I got a badge. What are they going to do?
I'm a man with all my manly things. Of course I can fix this.
You just see. And the cool part about this is why I like it, like Nightmare on Elm Street, is where sometimes you can have something happen in your head and it's so visceral and it just like up in your face. It changes the chemistry and now you think that's real life. And so for the rest of the movie, Vince Vaughn's got a pretty badass tummy ache because he got his intestine ripped out in somebody else's head. So now he's limping around like he's got an ulcer. I don't know what the end game of that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like he's just going to be living with this tummy pain for the rest of his life.
Or at least for a good while.
He's
going
to be limping around with a hernia.
I mean, at least a good while, like a phantom pain or like hypnosis where like, yeah, for a while you're going to feel
bad dreams for sure.
Yeah, but you're eventually going to kind of shake it off.
Good luck dating that guy because he's waking up in a cold sweat.
He's going to be more like Vince Vaughn in The Breakup.
Oh, yeah. Nice throwback.
That's why he's driving that bus.
Ooh, by the way, this movie does end on sort of a... There's a couple open-ended things that I like. One of them is that the movie at the outset, Jennifer Lopez, the psychologist character, is trying to get through to this kid who's been in a coma.
Yeah.
And so now that they've proven with their backs against the wall that you don't have to go into their head, you can make them go into your head and maybe that's the way you heal this boy. I think that's all going to work out just fine.
Yeah.
That's my prediction for the movie. But I'm also wondering, is that really safe? Or does it go horribly, horribly wrong?
I mean, that's the other kicker on that, too.
You can't bring a crossbow to the poor little kid.
I mean, more importantly, the kid taking over is more what I say. It's like, once he starts fiddling around with her head looking for revenge, like, again, like, he looks like a little cute boy.
Well,
So did Carl the serial killer.
Exactly. I think you're right. I think maybe it doesn't work out, and it should be a cautionary tale, because Elon Musk is trying to get in all our heads, and I don't think that's going to end up too well, so...
Anything starting with those two names, I don't think is going to be ending.
Yeah. However, he is producing the next Tom Cruise space movie. Elon, hi. How are you? If you need a female on that spaceship, you let me know.
Available. What's it like to wear a flight attendant suit for a couple months?
You asked that. It was the same one.
They never look comfortable. And I always feel bad for the flight attendants because, like, can't you get some? I mean, you're on a flight. When I'm on a flight, this isn't the
sweats.
40s. I'm not going in a suit and a hat.
Yeah.
I'm sweats. I'm basically in my pajamas.
Yeah, the skirt was, it's a slim skirt. It's like a, what do you call that? Like a skinny skirt. So, it's kind of constricting. I will say, though, in comparison to The Cell, it's probably a much more manageable outfit to wear. Whereas, like, in The Cell, I imagine Vincent D'Onofrio is in that, like, puffy, giant, like, Dracula thing. And then he's, like, sitting in his chair and it's, like, all uncomfortable and rubbery.
Yeah, that seems... I love the pictures of the set where it's, like, somebody in a, like, elaborate costume and they're taking a break and they're just, like, smoking it. It's like
a creature
from the Black Lagoon.
They're all covered in a color and they're just, like, smoking. Yeah, yeah,
just, like, eating a Quest bar. I love that stuff.
He has no lines, but I swear to you, he earned an Oscar for what he had to go through. This,
he has no lines. Yeah.
He's like he has a couple, but he has so few lines in this. And the fact that what he had to go through.
Who are you?
And like a couple of little quotes.
Yeah, he does that kind of stuff. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And then he has a couple of quotes when he's regular. He's like out and about before they discover him. He talks to somebody random, that kind of stuff. But again, the costumes, just like the big one from the book, because this film is also featured in the book, where he's wearing is basically his version of Tim Curry's Darkness from Legend.
Yeah.
All of that is hours of contacts. And this was back when that stuff was not kind.
Oh, so annoying. People have no idea.
This was the same year that Jim Carrey's How the Grinch Stole Christmas came out.
Yeah. Mm.
And his contact lenses were the toughest part of like that Grinch makeup.
Yeah,
like,
it's a lot of it's just his face.
It's 5 hours to get on, 5 hours to get off. The contact lenses were the thing that pushed him over the edge.
Same thing with Robert Pattinson on the first Twilight. Really? Made them do it digitally after that.
What?
He refused.
Good for him. I fully support that.
You ain't messing with my eyes. You can microchip my brain, but you ain't messing with my eyes.
Yeah, I'm going to sign out on both.
I think that before, if you're one of these people and you want to be microchipped, fine. But you should have to watch The Cell first. Just because The Cell might be the best, at least recently, of any of these psychological horror thriller movies where you actually go inside somebody's head, because it can get really bad really fast. Like the movie Transcendence.
Yeah.
A lot of the sequels, Nightmare on Elm Street, it's like, what are we even doing here? But this one, like, I did want to get deeper. And that's my complaint as a moviegoer, is that I wanted to get deeper into what was going on, because it felt like, I don't know, it felt a little like Tron Legacy to me, where we're just kind of making up the rules as we go.
Yeah.
The thing that bugged me about Tron Legacy is, like, this kid has never played this sport before, and he instantly becomes LeBron James.
Yeah.
And with this, it's like, well, I want to know why, how do you get powers in this world? How do you take power away from somebody else? It's more than just, now you're in my head, and I can make the rules. I just want to see how that kind of works. Yeah. But maybe that could have been for the sequel.
I also feel like, maybe, and the screenwriters, again, kudos to them. I do think that they did a fantastic job. But I will say, it would have been pretty cool if you did have, like, a super, like, crime, true crime, like, serial killer profiling nerd to kind of add a little flourishes in there to make it more, you know, like, if we're going to make a movie about getting into Richard Ramirez's head, that's the scariest movie
ever.
It's not going to be beautiful.
Yeah.
It's going to be hell. It's going to be a nightmare. It's going to make Freddy Krueger look like Disneyland.
Freddy Krueger look like Disneyland is exactly what it put it.
The casting of the other scientists I thought was great. I love he's sort of like a character actor, Dylan Baker, because he's the ultimate, like, nerdy white guy who gets the line in every, like, big budget alien movie where he's, like, taking off his glasses and he's like, the ship's already arrived. Like, that kind of thing. He's got that permanent frightened white guy neighbor face. Yeah. And I love it for this movie.
Yeah. I think Charlie Cox took his job in Pacific Rim.
Oh, Charlie Day.
Charlie Day. Did I say Charlie Cox? Yeah. Charlie Day took his job in Pacific Rim. There's a character often.
Yeah. Is there a line in this where it's like, we're inside.
We're inside.
There's definitely that. Oh, you got to have that one.
Oh, my other favorite version of this character is Jason Isaacs in Armageddon. He's the one, well, if you want to listen to the man who failed his MIT physics class for your jet propulsions, you can. And then he leaves the movie and never shows up again. I don't know what happened to Jason Isaacs on that movie, but he came in, he was a smart ass for one scene and then left.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure the only reason Paul Giamatti signed on to be in San Andreas was so he could deliver those lines.
Exactly.
Because he has a blast.
Is he in San Andreas?
He's the guy that's the fault line's here and it's here. And then he's like taking his glasses,
Sideways,
putting them back on.
Sideways is my favorite movie of all time. Sorry.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's my number one.
I don't know why I didn't say this. Don't you play the smartest person in the room in Jurassic World, basically? Kind of like you do that.
I do. Yes, that, like, this is correct. Is
like, wait a minute. We're sitting with a version of
this. I know. And yet we're listening to not all the, you know, the gutsiest, the brave people. The smart person never is the one who's
leading.
But like,
you are literally like screaming, we need to do this movie too.
There is something I do in that movie that has always bugged me and it pisses me off every time I see it. I'm like, why did I do that? That's so stupid. There's a moment where, I don't know.
Is this Fallen Kingdom or Dominion?
This is Fallen Kingdom. Okay. Chris and Bryce, their characters, they ask me something. We're together and we're inside this the back of this truck and under like an awning and the raptor's on the table. And my hand is covered in dry blood. And I'm literally going, and I watched it. I'm like, you fucking idiot. No doctor would ever, and I know that all these vets were watching that, like, stupid movies.
Yeah.
It's my biggest regret.
Yeah, but you're so accustomed to being just soaked in blood. I mean, there's dinosaur chaos going on all over the place.
How are you even going about it? No, she's a good actress. Like, no, I'm putting some intensity to this. I'm getting some movement in this scene. I'm not going to be standing. I'm going to try and add a little bit more in this very big action movie without remembering the fact that you have, like, fake pain.
But it's maybe the dumbest thing in the entire movie.
It's not the dumbest thing in the entire movie. Your lead actress ran in heels. I'm so sorry. Like,
that was the first one.
That was the first one, but still, if there's dumb moments in this franchise, you don't even crack the top 10.
Do I have to point out to you that she was wearing the heels because that's what the male expectation of her character was, and she was playing the role, and she didn't know she was going to get chased by dinosaurs that day.
Hang on a second. And I got to come to Bryce's defense on this. No one ever looks at Beyonce like, how do you do a tour in heels? She does that entire tour.
Thank you.
Yeah,
in heels. It can be done. I think that subject needs to be put to rest.
That does need to be put to rest. But basically what I'm saying, no one's laughing at you.
Like, there's been plenty of things the internet to be mad about. Yeah. I don't think your hand was one of them, although I do appreciate the, like, self-analysis to be like, I know somebody is pissed off about this. Yeah. And my trauma will make me feel that it's more than that. But I know somebody is pissed off about this.
I think the last few years have all taught us to wash our hands more. I will still take the dog walk. I'll pick up her stuff. And then I'll go right back in the house and drink a beer and not think about it and not think about how close the hands
and
are.
Then, like, and then, like, eat the chicken nuggets. And
just live with someone. They remind you.
Yeah.
Because I, like, don't
You're allowed
take,
to do that?
I don't take care of my body, like, at all. Anything that is involved with this shell, like, I'm just pretending that it exists without sustenance, food, or any kind of, like, taking care of. Like, I clean my body, but, like, just the idea of, like,
you clean your vessel.
I clean my vessel, but I just don't take care of it.
I mean, that's liberating.
Yeah, so it's nice when somebody, like, he doesn't even like me to bring the poop up. He's like, you should just throw it away downstairs. Why are we throwing away the poop?
Oh.
That's what the neighbor's trash can is for.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even. I bring it upstairs because I'm like, I don't know. There's something about me. I'm like, I don't want this out here.
Oh, right. Interesting.
We're going to transition from wiping fake blood on your face.
And dog poop.
Unceremoniously and cleaning up poop to your favorite J-Lo movie of all time. We started with it. We're going to end with it. If you have one movie to take with you on the ship to go to the next planet and it's a J-Lo movie, which flick are we taking? Her new movie, Shotgun Wedding. It's on Amazon. Where Dog Stepfather Lives, the wonderful stand-up special where I do talk about cleaning up Molly's poop. Is it a rom-com? Like Shotgun Wedding or is it something else?
It is a rom-com. Yes, it is a rom-com. Yes.
No. Is that the movie you're taking?
Oh, I see.
Is it a rom-com or is it like something like Selena, which is music and tragedy? Is it?
Yeah. You know.
Is it Anaconda?
Oh, God, this is a tough one.
I will say her top movie on the tomato meter is a top contender of mine. And that's 94% Out of Sight.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
That bathtub scene still holds up.
Yeah, maybe. Woo! You know what? Actually, I'll tell you which one I'm taking.
Okay.
I would say Selena, but it's too depressing. And I always get really, really sad when I watch it. Even though there's a speech in that where Edward James Olmos and they're in the car and they're talking about what it's like to be Mexican. If you're from Mexico and you make fun of Mexican-Americans, you need to watch that scene. And if you're white and you tell someone they're not really Mexican, you need to watch that scene. I wish that scene would just play 24/7.
It's one of those movies that you want to cut off like 10 minutes before it ends.
It's so depressing.
It just hits you. Yeah.
No, but I'm taking Jiggly.
Oh, wow.
I'm taking Jiggly.
You're taking
Geely?
That movie.
Yeah, the Geely. I'm taking the Geelys.
Why? May I ask why?
You know what? Because sometimes you just gotta watch an incredible calamity. Sometimes you just wanna watch who you're. It's just two people in love, and I support love.
Man.
I love that you're going to this new planet based on my premise. And the way that you're introducing this new race of people to cinema, actress Daniela Pineda brought one movie and it's Geely, arguably the most critically hated movie of the last 30 years.
Yeah. It ended Martin Brest's career.
Oh, did it?
The great director of Beverly Hills Cop. I will say Jersey Girl.
Yeah.
Which also was Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez.
But that's not a J-Lo movie, though.
Yeah, it's a Kevin Smith movie, but it's better than Geely, I imagine.
Yeah.
Okay, what are you taking? And can it compete with Geely?
Well, that's what I was about to say. Jiggly. I had to go look at her filmography because I can definitely name off all of her movies, but I want it to feel like a J-Lo movie. And like, for example, for me, I wouldn't put Jersey Girl in there and I wouldn't put Out of Sight even in there because as much as those are movies that star her, they're not her movies. Like, you know what I mean? And I do feel, to your point, it does need to be a rom-com. And so that was down to two for me. And that was Monster in Law or Made in Manhattan because those are my two favorites.
I think her favorite's Made in Manhattan.
I think hers is Made in Manhattan too. And I would go with that one just because of all the leading men that she had, the only one that I would think about is Rafe.
That's true. He's the classiest of all of them.
What are you talking about?
Like, I would.
The wedding planner, McConaughey. He's right there.
It's not what I want to date. I'm sure he's great. I don't want to date him. I want to date Ralph Fiennes, though. Now, I would still also date Ralph Fiennes. Like, in the menu, Ralph Fiennes, any time of day, year, or month.
You're going to date
high. I mean, sophistication.
Voldemort over Matthew McConaughey.
Even in the makeup, girl. He's smart. He's smart. You know what it is? It doesn't matter what he looks like. He can stimulate your mind. And that has one of the greatest J-Lo lines where she says, walks in her Cinderella moment. It has a Cinderella moment. It's of the two movies that have like the Cinderella moment, this is the best one. But the best part about it is she walks in and she's like, I just need you to know this can't go past this evening. And he's like, well, you should have worn a different dress. Bitch.
I know. You know what, though? I think they should have switched. Right. I think the casting on that should have switched because Ralph Fiennes is too refined to be a politician, especially nowadays. I think, and McConaughey was going to apparently run.
Yeah.
I think you put Ralph Fiennes
In The Wedding Planner.
In The Wedding Planner, and you put Matthew McConaughey in The Maid in Manhattan.
It would have livened up The Maid in Manhattan a little bit.
It would have minded
up
Maid,
I found that movie
yeah.
a little dreary. I know it's a romantic movie. The comedy, a little skimpy on the comedy for me. Mm. I'm taking The Wedding Planner, I'm taking McConaughey, but you heard it first here, Mars. The movies you're getting are Gigli and Maid in Manhattan, thanks to Daniela and Jacqueline. No Anaconda.
No.
Oh, that point that I was gonna say though, Anaconda when what's it, John Voight?
Yeah.
Is it John Voight?
Yeah.
Where he spits him out and then he goes,
yeah. And he winks.
Oh, that was gnarly.
Everything that the cell gave us on visual effects, Anaconda took it away.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, we gotta say goodbye to movie talk for now. That's The Cell. I think we all agree that we proved Rotten Tomatoes is wrong about that, and then we maybe sullied our own opinions in the process. But that's movie talk. Let's head over to Mailbag. This week, we have Ketchup crew member Ryan Painter, one of our favorites, who says, how have you not done The Prophecy from 1995 with Christopher Walken, Eric Stoltz, and a pre-Lord of the Rings, Viggo Mortensen, but post-Young Guns 2, Viggo Mortensen. Walken is at his creepy and campy best. This movie has been absolutely wronged, and an historic wrong must be righted. Ryan Painter, well, I'll be honest with you, Ryan, I believe I saw The Prophecy, maybe... Classic Video Update was my video store as a Ute. And Williamsburg, Virginia, we didn't have Blockbuster, but we had Video Update. And I remember seeing The Prophecy, remember seeing Chris Walken. And it was always like my backup or my second backup movie. And for whatever reason, during around that time, I had a pretty good run of whatever my first choice was going to be being available. Because, you know, sometimes you go there and it's like, oh, Bram Stoker's Dracula isn't in, I guess. It's Sister Act 2 again.
Yeah.
But here, I think The Prophecy was my backup, and it never got called up. It never actually got in the game. Y'all see The Prophecy?
I have not.
Years ago.
Yeah.
I have not.
Yeah. It's a horror movie, right?
Yeah. Oh, that was a Blockbuster horror section. That's where you could find me.
Well, I'll take your Prophecy and raise you a Covenant, because that's the movie I always think is The Prophecy when I think of it. But The Covenant is the one that stars Sebastian Stan, and it's like Skulls, but campy.
I love him.
I would also throw The Craft in there as the movies that I sort of get mixed up. I'm like, wait, that's The Prophecy, or that's the...
Yep, same.
So good.
Warlock's another one. With Julian Sands.
Oh my God, that is so old.
Is that with the blonde dude?
Yeah.
He's like in a trench coat and he's all like rocky.
Yeah.
Trench coats are big, man, in horror movies.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we are unfortunately going to have to say goodbye to this episode. We know we could talk about this movie, The Cell, and J-Lo movies and Vince Vaughn movies forever, but it's time to say goodbye to Miss Daniela Pineda, but not before we get a recommendation, something streaming, maybe something. You seem very excited about what your recommendation was going to be.
Yes, I am. Well, I've talked about this before, but my favorite animation of all time that I grew up on is Beavis and Butthead.
Yes.
And Mike Judge has just come out with his newest season of Beavis and Butthead, which is streaming on Paramount Plus. And it is fucking awesome. And he does a split. I think it's like every other episode. They do Beavis and Butthead now, what they're like old.
Yeah.
And it's incredible.
Do they still do music videos at all?
Now they just watch like YouTube videos.
Yeah.
So it's a perfect transition.
Yeah.
By the way, I didn't know, and this totally blew my mind, that this is my favorite cartoon. I didn't know till recently that Mike Judge is the one who does all the voices.
Yeah.
It was literally like when that happened, it was like algorithms and a door. And it was like, what is reality? How did I not know that?
And this is the man that made Silicon Valley. Like when you look at his filmography, you're like, man, you don't care. You just want to be funny. King of the Hill.
Another underrated, in my opinion.
Yep, same.
All right, but always a light in our life is Miss Daniela Pineda, who you can currently see on the big screen in Plane. Again, congratulations. It's a fresh movie. I know you got a lot of exciting stuff coming up. Is there anything you want to plug, or where can all the kids out there find you?
You know, I'm on the Instagram at not Daniela Pineda, and that's pretty fun. You know, I'm really good on the gram with the kids. I'm not on the talk. Maybe I'll regret that, my career. And I've got The Plane, which is out with Gerard Butler, and it is kick ass and a lot of fun.
We can have sequels for
forever.
Eons.
I would do that. Hey, they did Greenland. They made another Greenland after that was a success. I don't see why there might not be a Plane too.
Yeah,
I agree.
And just because I know that we're taping this a couple weeks in advance, but the Super Bowl is this Sunday. Do you think Cincinnati Bengals, are they going to be competing in Arizona?
Is Joe Burrow Joe Burrow? Shout out to Bingle Barrel. You know what it is.
If so
you
funny?
Like Cincinnati, you know the Bingle Barrel. Joe Burrow's God. Jamar Chase, I love you.
Watch Daniela's stories if you want to know what Bingle Barrel is.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's for like the deep cut, the real fans.
Yeah. Okay.
Jacqueline, we got a big episode next week. What are we talking about?
Yeah, it's going to be American. It's going to be hot and it's going to be wet.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about. What time of the year is it?
It's summer.
Oh,
Wet
right.
Hot American Summer, kids. We're going to be talking about the little indie that could. This movie that would not go away, but that everybody loved.
Can I tell y'all something? I've still never seen it. I know.
What?
I'm a fan of everybody involved. I love The State on MTV. I still haven't seen it. So I get to do my research and I get to watch
you
what
do.
Apparently is a great movie. Will it be too hyped for me?
Probably.
Oh, maybe. Probably.
Yeah. I will say, like, I watched it after it was hyped for me, getting ready for the show, and I definitely said, this is y'all's thing.
Okay. All right. So there you go.
I don't
next
hate
week,
it, but
no, I
Wet
agree.
Hot American Summer. Make sure y'all check out RottenTomatoes.com. That's sort of our hub, everything from TV, movies, everything in between, the world of entertainment. Subscribe, rate, review. Whatever you choose to listen to this on, do what that service asks you to do for this podcast. Thank you again to Daniela Pineda, to Jacqueline Coley, to Brian Perez, our wonderful engineers here in studio, the whole gang here at Rotten Tomatoes. I am Ely Mark Ellis. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.